deal of fun. I will introduce my helpers later as they will show you the products and the services that we are currently working on and that we're shipping very soon or are already shipping. But before that, I would like to set up a couple of things to get you into the right mindset of how we think about the problem. In the beginning, we really were very hardware driven, and we were thinking about a lot of the experiences through automation, and the customer experience was trying to make life easier in the phone, in the car, in the home, and it was driven primarily by hardware interfaces. Then, as you guys know, you've been all there, the microprocessor changed the world, and we moved to a world of digitization. I was actually there when Mr. Leno told Mr. Gates what he thought the word Microsoft were when he was talking about his wedding night, so not a good idea, apparently. And so we were thinking how that all would work in terms of how you move the bits from the hardware experience to much more of a software experience with generalized hardware systems underneath. And now we have reached the age of data, the age of intelligence that is moving and changing the way we think about user experiences, about customer experiences, and about what you expect from applications, from systems, how you interact with them. I talked to an SAP person once, and he had an awesome set of data. I thought, wow, these guys are pretty cool. So he said to me that they actually own 60% of the world's GDP. They process 60% of the world's GDP in their SAP systems. And he said to me, you know what? We actually haven't even really started to begin processing data yet, because when they think about data now, they're actually looking at everything that happens around the transactions, not just the booking of the order or the buying of the car. They're actually now looking at, okay, what's happening until I get to the buying of the car? And now we're actually seeing up to 70 times more transactions around the data before we actually get to a purchase experience. And that's really what's meant with the age of data. And applying the intelligence, finding the interesting bits of data, finding the patterns, and really understanding of how to use it to drive your business forward, make your customers happy, is really what we're here to talk about. The engines of data are very clear. We have a lot of mission-critical systems. We invest and use data warehouses. We are thinking a lot about BI. And of course, now you've seen the little rocket ship, you're seeing advanced analytics at work, at speeds and at data volumes that have been never been achieved before because of the way the cloud works. And one of the investments we are making is, of course, our SQL Server product. And we are talking about SQL Server 2016 today, the first release which is really starting with its root in the cloud. And the root in the cloud is important from a number of perspectives. Think about the speed we have in terms of bringing features forward. My team, the Azure team, about every day we ship new code. Every week we update features and functions, and every 6 months we deploy an entire lifecycle. If you look at what happened to SQL Server as a SQL service, it has been moving so fast after coming from behind because it was an on-premise product moving into the cloud, and it took us a while to make it a cloud product. Now we are really looking at how do we use the agility to make capabilities come up faster? How do we use the immediate feedback that we get? Because we are collecting a lot of telemetry data about the databases that customers use. We don't know anything about the customer data, but we know a lot of things about what's happening onto these servers, what's happening on these databases, and we can effectively apply that feedback right away in the product cycle. And that way we allow the cloud product to harden before we put it into a package that you can then deploy on-premise. Because one of the key things that we are very much invested in is the hybrid cloud, meaning on-premise deployments, public cloud deployments, and mixtures in between. Gartner has graced us with some very nice honors after quite a long time and a lot of work in this business. Microsoft finally made it beyond Oracle. We're not only from a vision perspective, but also the ability to execute is finally where Microsoft is ahead of Oracle. I started at Microsoft in April 1991 as an Oracle guy. I used to work with Oracle for DOS. I don't know if you remember Oracle 5.2. If you do, then you have been in this business also quite some time. And Oracle was clearly a much more mature database product even then. But now, 25 years later, we are surpassing them. And the reason is very clear. A, because of you, because you're using the product, you're helping us making the product better. But the primary reason is actually the public cloud. Because we are running SQL Server as a service, we are learning a lot, and we are applying that learning in real time as fast as we possibly can to bring better and new features out. SQL Server 2016 is effectively a product that is driven by all that learning from usage, from your feedback, and we are effectively applying this in a number of areas. Mission critical OLTP. As I said before, we are now the industry leader in terms of database products. Most secure database, we have done a lot of work to make sure that the database server is as secure as we possibly can make it. There is a lot of investment and focus on that. Highest performing data warehouse. We own the three top database data warehouse benchmarks, and Oracle is number four. We also are putting a lot of features into the product that other people charge quite a lot of money for. And we would love to charge that money, but we believe that an end-to-end experience with a lot of features and capability is way more important than $200 more here or there. So from our perspective, you want an end-to-end solution, not just a partial solution, which you have to compose together with purchasing additional things. One of the things I'm especially proud of is our integration of the R engine into the SQL Server system. So you not only can run normal T-SQL, you can now also run R scripts, advanced analytics scripts, inside the SQL engine, commingling the data that you already have in the relational or the data warehouse system with advanced analytics using R. And that's certainly a very important piece going forward for analytics and so forth. One other thing we have been doing a lot, where people have been saying we need an in-memory database for this and in-memory database for that, we believe in-memory is something that all of the various workloads need. Be it a warehouse, be it an OLTP system, or be it analytics, you need to be able to use memory to speed up access. And last but not least, really drive a consistent experience from on-premise to the cloud and to the hybrid experience. In order for you to get a real experience, I would like to get Christina up here, and she will share with you SQL Server 2016 in action. Christina.
Hi, everyone. Oh, can you hear me? Hello. I'm going to do two different functions, features out of the SQL Server 2016 kit that I think are amazing. The first one I'm going to talk about is StretchDB. I used to be a database administrator in a previous life, and I was constantly having arguments with my SAN administrators about how much space I need to run my databases. The amount of data that businesses are collecting is growing exponentially, so StretchDB is our answer to that problem. So imagine having a database where you've got your hot data, the data that you need for fast access on-premises, and the data that you don't need fast access to, but you still want to keep in the cloud without having to change any code in your applications, without having to make any changes whatsoever. And when you do a select statement against that data, it just joins seamlessly and you wouldn't know the difference. That's what StretchDB does for us. So the first thing I'm going to do is show you that we have some tools. So we've got something here called the SQL 2016 Upgrade Advisor. As part of that, in our scenarios section, we've got the StretchDB Database Advisor. So from here, I've pre-run it, pre-cooked. We have a report. So this report looks very familiar. And in this top quadrant here is where you should see the objects where we want StretchDB takes the least amount of effort and will give you the most amount of benefit. So in here, and then we can save the report, and you can click on different objects in here and get a listing of why you shouldn't stretch this table. So you can actually see what's impacted and the reasons why. Once you run that report, I'll come into SQL Server, you can actually now come and run StretchDB. Now, I'm running it on this host here. We have a really good, it's built into the GUI. So I've already enabled it, again, I've pre-cooked, but we can come in and reconfigure. So in here, we can just go through and we can select our tables. And I'll expand this because also built in is you can actually see some information about all the tables in your database, how many rows they are and the size. So you've got a general idea of already how much you're going to save. So I'm going to go down here and I'm going to click on this one, customer stretch. So you can see this one is already stretching. And we'll go next. We run a validation on it and next and finish. So while that's running in the background, I'll come here. So under tasks and stretch DB, we have this monitor. That's what this page is. So the monitor here, you can see the table that I've already stretched. You can get details on how much is on premises and how much is in the cloud. It refreshes. You can get health details. It's an awesome tool. Exciting? Sorry, I'm going to do this really quickly. Cool. Okay. I'll show you the next thing now. So, I'll go back in because you should see that second table pop up. Nope. Anyway, I'll come back to it later. So, the second thing I want to quickly show you, and it has to be really quickly, is always encrypted. I'm going to show you this. So, I built this app. It's just a Windows Form app that's just doing a straight select off a table. And it just looks all clear text. What's actually happening is quite exciting. So if I come back out here into my and run a select statement against the table, where am I, control one? Can you see that? So the first name, last name, and credit card number are actually encrypted on the table. So what Always Encrypted does and why it's different from what other tools we've used in the past is it's where the encryption happens. The encryption is happening at the client level. So when the client sends a select statement, it hits the .NET client, it converts it and encrypts the statement, which sends it back to the SQL server. So you're getting encryption across the wire. The SQL server then gets the data, sends it back, still encrypted, and it hits the .NET client and decrypts again. So Always Encrypted gives you encryption right across the board. The other really cool thing here is, if you look at this data, you notice there's a little AXX at XXX.com. And if you look at my data here, and I'll go control one again. Notice, if you can see that, that's not what's actually in the database. So this is another little function that I've put in called dynamic data masking. So you can also set roles of the people who can see the data unmasked and the people who has to see it masked all the time. So my little app, the data's coming out masked. So that's two levels of security. So if you want to see more of this stuff, we've got a couple of sessions through the week that go into this quite deeply. I hope to see you at them. Thank you, Uli.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Wow. So encryption is one of those things which is certainly very, very important when you're moving stuff into the cloud and when you're persisting data and showing credit card data, personal identifiable data in a great format that is always encrypted is very, very critical to security to you. If your data is getting stored by various retail vendors, which we all know happen to be hacked. Now, let's switch gears and talk about the other side of the house. So we talked about the relational database with all the capabilities built into the system, but now we're looking at the world of IoT, the world of connected data. And I won't bore you with the numbers, but the number of data that we're collecting is unbelievably large. Currently in our data centers, we have about 4 exabytes of data under management. Exabytes, not petabytes. And one is, for example, just one data warehouse, which has almost 2 exabytes of data in it to run various internet analytics and so forth. And we are just a small part of how the internet is growing data. And part of this is, what are we seeing people trying to do with this new found wealth of data? What are they asking and what are they trying to achieve? I assume most of you will have seen the ThyssenKrupp example, which is our elevator friends, and they're really trying to figure out, how do I become a better provider to my customers? They get paid by SLA. Their SLA is effectively you don't getting stuck in an elevator, and the elevator effectively running all day up and down without breaking down. And they're using IoT, collecting data, and they're using Azure Machine Learning to predict when maintenance needs to happen on the one side. And on the other side, they're actually bringing or telling the field engineer not only that they need to do maintenance, but what are the two or three top reasons why maintenance is required, so that they can bring the right stuff with them and bring effectively the right material, the right books, and whatever they need to repair or prevent the elevator from breaking. So ThyssenKrupp elevators, 1.2 million elevators that they're working on to deploy worldwide. Our friends from Pier 1 Imports, I don't know if that is a Australian brand as well. Where was I? I was on Manly Beach, and I'm a German by birth. And I saw Aldi and said, wow, I could move here. I could live again because the Aldi guys are already here, so I will be safe from a food perspective. Pier 1 is a similar thing in the US where they actually bring a lot of European style goods into the system. I don't know if they're actually coming from Europe or if it's just European style, quote unquote. But these guys are really trying to figure out how do I tell not what the mass of people would like, but what Uli would like, or what my friend Christina would like. And so they're using machine learning and tracking of your purchasing behavior to effectively predict what are the things that I should offer people like me and really drive a personalized offer. The other one, this is a really interesting one. I hadn't thought about that, but it's a really cool use case for a school. So in the US, I don't know if it's the same in Australia, but there's quite a lot of people that don't make it through high school. They effectively stop going to school. They effectively move into the business world. And this Tacoma-based school worked with us and some data scientists to effectively figure out who's at risk of churning and also figuring out how to engage those people by giving them offers of school classes that they would be interested in. And I don't know the exact number, but they are seeing a very big increase of people that stay that were at risk. There are other examples for this where people like HP, as a public use case, are using it to predict employees that will churn. Then, of course, you see telcos using this a lot to see if you're going to move to another telco or an internet provider and so forth. So customer churn is a very big one. And then the other one is effectively similar to this ThyssenKrupp elevator piece where Carnegie Mellon University is using IoT sensors all over the place to effectively figure out how to heat the buildings better, how to use less energy, and how to predict effectively what needs to be changed in terms of repairs, what needs to be optimized in terms of heating, lighting, and so forth. And the questions that you need to ask are very, very similar. You first need to find out what data sets do you need or what is available. You need to get access to these things. You need to shape the data. You need to run experiments. You need to repeat until you figure out, is your hypothesis actually backed up by the data? You need to find the insight, and then you need to operationalize or drive action. So very, very similar activities, very complicated to do, especially when you have a lot of data that you need to worry about. For that, Microsoft has invested in a suite of capability called the Cortana Analytics Suite. And it starts on the my left-hand side, so your left-hand side too, yeah, actually, it works. So your left-hand side is effectively the side that generates information, be it business applications, be it sensors, be it people, be it God knows what. And it flows through an information management layer that allows you to shape the data, to discover data sets and so forth. Then we're storing data, and then you effectively apply various analytics engines into it. Note my word, engines, not just one. There is never a single answer to any question, to my experience. So it's important to have multiple application or analytics engines at your availability to run the analytics. And then there's various usages, from dashboards and visualizations all the way to perceptual intelligence and digital assistants like Cortana that effectively will enable you to really engage with your people in a different fashion. In order to make that happen, I will invite my friend Bornem onto the stage, and he will show you Cortana Analytics Suite in action. Please welcome Bornem.
Hey guys, can you hear me? So just a question, show of hands, how many of you have heard of or seen or used or hated or loved howl.net? All right, quite a few hands. It went really popular, so I'm not surprised. Howl.net was, as you might be aware, it was a demo we built for the Build conference, which was held in the US in May. And I thought, you know, for the sake of explaining the different components of the Cortana Analytics Suite, and mind you, those components keep on increasing. So howl.net has a subsection of all the components. So let me walk you through it, and then we'll go from there. So howl.net effectively is it's just a website which uses what we call the Face API, which is part of one of the best of breed APIs that Microsoft Research has built and published into our Cortana Analytics Gallery. So if you go to gallery.cortanaanalytics.com, then you'll see a list of experiments and APIs that are ready for consumption. This is a marketplace of sorts. It's got its own e-commerce engine behind it. So if you are very confident with the API or the intelligence that you build or the models that you build, you can publish them into the gallery itself and then monetize it from there on like a per 1,000 call or per 10,000 call basis. But you can also publish your experiments in there. So this is the gallery which has all the APIs and the experiments that you might publish. Mind you, enterprises can have their own private marketplaces for this as well, or marts for these. In the case of howl.net, let me just do a quick score. All right. So what you just saw happen was basically the Face API at work. The Face API is a machine learning API that takes a photograph and then scores the faces in the photograph for their age and gender. The components that enable this to happen are effectively, first of all, what we call Azure Event Hubs. Azure Event Hubs are what Uli described in the previous slide, are the large-scale event ingestion engines. They can be utilized for multiple different kinds of events. Event hubs are fully managed and scaled to millions of events a second. All right, Uli's giving me the slowdown, all right. You showed us a car that's trying to break the speed record. All right, anyway, cool. So we have the event hubs, which are ingesting a lot of events. Then we need a way to then apply the analytics, apply the scoring on those events in real time, and then give you back the insight into what those events are being processed as. I'll show you what we call the next step of it, Stream Analytics. Stream Analytics is a part of Azure, which is effectively a standing query on an event stream. It uses a very SQL-like language. Let me show you very quickly the Stream Analytics query that I have running. So if I was to go to Stream Analytics and go to one of the queries, so as you can see, this has got an event hub endpoint, and that's the query that is, as you can see, it's just 8 lines worth of SQL-like code. I say SQL-like because there is some extra functionality in Stream Analytics itself. The output in this case is I haven't added an output to this one, but to another query is Power BI. So if I open up the Power BI dashboard, that's the live running dashboard of the howl.net solution. As you can see, we have over 85 million unique users to date. We have 575 million photographs, and it's streaming, and the average age today is 28.97, and look at that. So if we dive deeper, when we launched it initially, it scaled up, and we had close to 16 million users by day, and that's the beauty of doing it as a PaaS solution, a platform solution. We didn't necessarily have to rescale, get new hardware, or try and do some smarts around scaling it without breaking it. This is effectively, it's a cloud solution that was managed and it scaled up by itself. And finally, we have, I'll try to show you a few other howl.net examples. So this is one of the tests we did initially was to test the Mona Lisa 23. Actually, when we did the test, and then later on we found out that when Leonardo actually painted the Mona Lisa, the model was about 23 and a half years old. So the system is quite compelling. And I'll show you exactly what the system is actually blurting out. That's the actual response when you send a request. So this is being predicted as 22 and a half, and the gender is female. So the system is actually quite sharp. This is just an example showing you the various components of the Cortana Analytics suite at work. As you saw on the slide, there are multiple components around it. There's a data factory component. There's the data warehousing component. If you're interested in diving deeper into the solution itself and all the scenarios and how to actually build your own machine learning algorithms, train them on large data sets, both in SQL or Hadoop or other data sets for that matter, and operationalize them and publish them and consume them in .NET apps or Excel workbooks in batches and stuff. I'm doing a session this afternoon at 4:45, I think. It's DAT 213. It's upstairs in rooms 5 and 6. So if you're interested, please come to that. We also have another deeper session on connected cars and the role of Cortana in that. I think that's on Thursday. So I'll give it back to Uli now, and hopefully that was interesting.
Absolutely. Thank you, my man. Yeah, so the next generation is already live. So we have just released a new update that actually understands emotion. So it actually sees if you're smiling, if you're laughing, if you're crying, if God knows what's going on. They also have updated the face recognition or the photo recognition system to deal with background. So it actually understands if you're inside, outside, if it's raining, if there's sunshine, and so forth. So you will see more and more of these kind of capabilities being used. Think about your car, which by now will have cameras, being able to read the street and tell you if it's wet or if it's dry or if it's ice or something like that, and apply the right security models for that specific condition. So there's a lot of interesting things happening by collecting interesting data, applying machine learning and other algorithms to it, and then apply them in various ways. In order for you to kind of get a picture of what this data track will talk about outside of these fancy demos, we'll talk about the pieces that we believe make Cortana Analytics Suite different and unique. First of all, we talk about manageability, we talk about types, operationalization, share and collaborate, because we never work alone. We never walk alone, we never work alone. What is it? Liverpool, right? They never walk alone, these guys. And then openness and end-to-end pictures. Fully managed set of services, Bonham already mentioned it. We actually want you to not think about infrastructure. We don't want you to think about setting up servers, patching them, and so forth. Worry about your solution. Worry about face recognition. Worry about customer churn, and so forth. So our perspective is you just provision the infrastructure you believe you need, and we do the rest. Borna mentioned Event Hub, just to give you an idea what the scale is we are currently running. We are currently processing about 1.7 trillion events per month, sorry, not quite per second. I wish we were there, but per month. 1.7 trillion per month. And a good deal of that is internal usage, because I use Event Hubs for Azure telemetry, processing of all the servers and so forth. And of course, the rest is done by customers. And one of the things we just released is, for example, HD Insight, which is our Hadoop distribution running as a service, supporting Linux. So you can pick Windows or Linux as your Hadoop host, and we will effectively provision how many you want. You can have 2 or 500 or 1024. We will take care of the provisioning for you. Work with all types of data, structured data, unstructured data, at any scale. We believe that part of the thing that's going to happen with data is we are going to see a lot of data. I mentioned my exabyte level stores. We are currently productizing a release of what we call the Azure Data Lake. It's currently out in open and public preview. And it's effectively a system that will support up to 1 exabyte per storage per customer. And the largest file you can store in that data lake is 1 petabyte in size. So we are preparing for your systems to grow to the size of an internet giant like Google or Microsoft or other players that are already working at that scale. The cool thing is we actually provide it as a standardized API set exposed through HDFS. So if you look at all the Hadoop distributions we support, you see that we not only support our own, which is HD Insight running as a service, but we work with Hortonworks, Cloudera, and other players. And as long as they support the HDFS API or the HDFS protocol as standardized by Apache, we will effectively give them that kind of scalability capability, up to 1 petabyte per file, up to 1 exabyte per customer. And you will effectively not see any difference. If you're running Hadoop on-premise, you migrate the data into the cloud, you run the same distribution inside Azure, it will continue as it works on-premise because it is just, quote-unquote, standard HDFS. Operationalizing. How do you effectively take it from the experimentation stage and really put it into production? Ideally using the same tools. One of the tools we are using is Azure Machine Learning, and in this case I'm using R as an environment to run the queries and run the algorithms. I already mentioned R as a system running inside SQL Server now. We're also using R inside Machine Learning as a standardized component. And of course, collaboration and sharing. We all work together, and we all need to be able to share our experiments, but also share our data and our data sets. And we just released a new capability called the Data Catalog, which allows you to effectively discover what other people have already published. What are the scenarios, the data sets that are available for you to explore? Remember when I went and asked, okay, what are the typical questions that a data scientist or a person that wants to explore data try to answer? What is the data available? And the Data Catalog allows you to create that private marketplace for data that you already have available in your enterprise, and you can, of course, share that with customers or partners using secure handshakes and identity systems like Azure Active Directory. And again, machine learning. My friend Bornan already showed you the machine learning gallery and the various places where you can learn how to use it, how to discover and share. And the system is built to be effectively completely web-based, so you don't need to install anything, you don't need to maintain anything. We take care of the maintenance and the deployment for you. You just worry about your machine learning experiment and your deployment into production of those machine learning applications. Openness. Embrace, extend, and figure out a way to use the industry momentum, be it formally standardized systems or be it Apache open source like systems. We effectively are working to make sure that whatever is out there, whatever you would like to use, can run in Azure, is fully supported, and can be extended with capabilities like the Azure Data Lake that allows you to store these massive amounts of data in various forms and ways. Microsoft supports Hadoop in its native form. We effectively are contributing quite a lot of code to the Hadoop Foundation. We support the typical HBase system. We support Storm, Spark, and then we have just added Hadoop on Linux. And the key thing here is we support all of that as a service. As a service, as Barnum said, we are effectively running the service for you. We patch it, we update it, we scale it. You just tell us how far you want us to jump, and we jump. And that is a very, very critical capability that we can provide and run at any point in time for you. But we're not only doing that for ourselves. So I have worked with a customer where the customer chose to run 2 experiments, one with a hosting company and a specific Hadoop distribution. Neither the hoster nor the distribution make any difference here. It took them about 6 weeks to get up and running, because they had to set up the racks, they had to configure them, they had to get Hadoop going, and so forth, and it took a little while. On the other side, the same customer ran the experiment with Cloudera, and the Cloudera was running on Azure. And my team had worked with Cloudera to effectively create what's called an Azure template, an Azure resource management template. And we effectively were able to run the Cloudera system within 20 minutes because it was already pre-configured, pre-designed, very much like HD Insight is. And we were just able to say how much, and it was automatically deployed, configured, and the customer was ready to run experiments after 20 minutes. So while we are doing this as a service and we operate the service fully for you, there are other ways to use Hadoop distributions like Cloudera or Hortonworks that are pre-designed, pre-configured, and ready to go. We don't operate those, but we help you getting productive faster in any case, because we believe that's a critical capability for you to really use the capability that's out there without having to worry about too much about infrastructure design and deployment. Microsoft's point of view in the data track that you will see will start at the beginning of the creation of the data, ingesting the system and the data, preparation for production usage, be it reporting, be it analytics, and various ways to publish it. My friend here didn't show Power BI. He was supposed to, but he was didn't think. So we will go there maybe again. And then you have various ways for consuming it. How many of you use Siri on a daily basis? Or Google Now or Cortana? All of you, I assume. It's actually amazing when you see these systems by now, what they can do. That you have contextual intelligence that understands that you ask the question first, and the next question actually builds on the first one. And it understands that you're saying, oh, who's the CEO of Microsoft? And then where was Satya born? Those questions are correlated. They understand that they're coming one after the other. You've seen the face APIs. We also have speech APIs. We have motion APIs. There's all sorts of interesting things happening where we are taking a lot of the research that happened over the last 30, 40 years and are now productizing it against the system so that you can think about how do you want to either present the data, share the data, or how do you want to really use the various signals that are coming. If you go into IoT scenarios today, you will see most likely that the systems are actually quite simple from a data perspective. They're sending key value pairs most of the time. And now we are pointing towards the next generation already where you actually are sending photos. You will send videos. We will do video analysis. The Microsoft Azure Media Services, which is not an analytics play today, is effectively able to analyze the video and put text markers in. So it can automatically do closed caption against videos that you actually upload to Azure Media Services and so forth. So don't think of the data platform as just looking at structured data or looking at simple Hadoop files. We actually go beyond that with photos, video, and other interesting signals that we are preparing to process, to analyze, and to publish in various ways so that your customers can consume them, you can consume them, and your employees can make better decisions. And that is effectively what we wanted to share with you as we transition from hardware through the software side into the intelligence side, all driving a better customer experience all up, not just customer, be it employees, be it suppliers, be it partners, be it God knows what. And part of the thing that we're also seeing, Joseph, who put this slide together, picked a very ugly autonomous driving car. So we are not just thinking about customer experience in terms of people experience the system, but it's also connected cars or autonomous driving robots. I saw actually some robots running around here that are actually going to be shown either on stage or in the exhibition to really show you that it's not just about people, it's also about things. And again, the Internet of Things structure and track is in parallel to the data track, although it really ought to be one, because without data, the Internet of Things is fairly boring. And it's certainly some of the things where we are using a lot of the data technology to drive the Internet of Things forward. As you saw in my use cases about customer churn, about smarter buildings, elevator automation, and so forth. It's all things, but at the end of the day, we're running very, very sophisticated analytics to drive the better experience, be it higher SLA, be it less customer churn, and so forth. So I invite you to go with us on this journey and really learn all the elements of data creation, ingestion, preparation, analytics, publication, and consumption that we showed you the first glimpse of. And all of these are going to be explained and evaluated in depth with lots of code samples. Always remember when you evaluate this session, this is an overview, keynote kind of thing, not where we go into deep code and have Visual Studio Code or Visual Studio up and running. I'm sure Burnham and company will actually show you more code than you ever wanted to see. With that, I thank you very much. We have time for questions if you have any. And of course, I'm very happy that you choose to be with us. So please fulfill the session evaluation, share your thoughts with us, what you would like to see more or different. And then continue Ignite learning path. I like that one, a learning path. So there's lots of learning to be done, and hopefully you will share with us as well what we can learn from you. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the week here in the Gold Coast or at the Gold Coast. Thank you. Any questions or thoughts? Otherwise, you can get another coffee. You have time. Okay, there is a question over there. Sorry, which one? Python? So Python is something we take very serious. So the machine learning team actually owns now the Python language team. And so it's going to be part of the machine, or is already part of the machine learning team, and we will do more. For SQL Server, we picked R first, because that's where most enterprises are investing. Not saying that Python is not important, but enterprises more on the R side. I don't know if we have a firm plan to do Python in SQL Server. We have a firm plan to do Python in ML. We're doing it already. I'm happy to take the question if Barnum knows you or can get a card. We can come back to you in terms of, is there a plan for Python and SQL Server. But the reasoning is because R is an enterprise play, and that's mostly going to be an enterprise deployment. Anybody else? Comments? Thoughts? You have the guy from Redmond here. You can ask him all sorts of questions. Yeah. So the question or the observation is, stream analytics, is that transactional? Is it going to lose data? So the system that stream analytics represents is not really a transaction system. You don't see ACID transactions in there. What you're seeing is an event data stream coming in. And since we're using a service bus derived technology with Event Hub, it actually does support message-like capabilities, like once delivery, guaranteed delivery. And there is actually a data store underneath. So we actually, I think, Event Hub gives you up to 30 days of storage for those events. But once you choose to move them into stream analytics, you effectively go into an in-memory pipe, and then you go into a connector into storage again. That's a very common use case where you take a raw event from a sensor or something, and you effectively turn it into something that you want to store. But stream analytics per se doesn't have any ACID capabilities. But it doesn't lose data per se either, because it's really an in-memory flight, very, very short in terms of running through the system. But we can't do start transactions and rollback and stuff like that.
If in the Event Hub's case, in the case of just Event Hubs, it has a very, if you use the Event Hub API, for example, has pretty robust checkpointing in Event Hub itself.
Yep.
Stream analytics is more, you know, as Lee said, it's more of a pulling things out of a stream, aggregating if you want, and giving you without actually going through putting stuff into a database and then querying the database again, just query on the fly, publish it.
In my session tomorrow morning about IoT Suite, I'll actually talk quite a lot about stream analytics, because it's a key part of what happens with IoT applications. There's a question over there. So wait. Let's do left first, and then we come back to right. Okay. Sorry, left.
Two questions. Firstly, when are we expecting to get the data lake out of preview? And secondly, what is going to be the recommendation for getting data into it from your existing
data? Oh, interesting
data.
One. Okay. I can't really tell you, because the key thing about all of these previews is we need feedback. And we are effectively collecting feedback, and based upon the number of either issues we find or capability requests we get, we determine are we ready or not. So far, I have seen very few, there are some exceptions, public previews that went longer than 6 months. Generally speaking, within the next 6 months, you normally see things happen, except if we have either a strategy alignment, or if the product is, we're getting so much feedback that it doesn't work, that people are unhappy. In this case, I doubt it, because we took an internal system that already runs at this multi-exabyte scale and ported it on top of Azure Storage and exposed HDFS instead of a proprietary MapReduce system. So this system has quite a lot of mileage on it already, but we still want to make sure that it works for the customer side. How do you get data into it? There are multiple ways of doing it. So it has a streaming API, and of course it has a normal HDFS file API. So however you get data into your Hadoop cluster will work against the Azure Data Lake, because you don't see the difference. It's just HDFS. And then there was a question on the right. Can you repeat the question, because I didn't hear it.
How do you manage versioning of APIs as the version changes, and if there's a product or integration built on top of it, as you update, will that product break or change and so on? Yeah.
So as we are supporting standard HDFS, we are aligning it with the HDFS releases as they come out of the Apache Foundation. And we have a certain number of parallel versions that we run. So I don't know exactly what HD Insight actually runs right now, but it's version 2 and 3. So multiple versions at the same time, and the same will be true for the HDFS API. And so we're aligning it with the Apache Foundation in terms of how they are moving as part of it.
So your question around just that, or also API management of
But this is a very HDFS specific one, not the general API management. That's a different one. Anything else? Otherwise, thank you very much again, and enjoy the rest of Ignite. The weather is certainly very nice out here, so I'll get a tan, or most likely it will get a little bit red, I guess. But thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the time.